Bishop's Marina, Rav Shlita. Sorry, I didn't bring the air miles with me to get out. As we approach the holiday season, some stay at home, some go into the countryside, some go abroad, but there are always interesting and practical questions relating to air travel. The Yerushalmi in Brochus in Perek Dalet says, Kol adrochim mecheska sakono. Whenever one goes on a journey, there is a chazoka that there could be a sakona, and therefore a number of questions arise. And we always say, Tfilas haderech. But there are a number of issues which come up when it comes to air travel. You can hear me even though there's the traffic noise.
Sorry?
It's alright, it's traffic noise. So there are questions relating to Tfilas HaDerech. There are certain issues arising when you have your airline meals, aspects of davening. We have in the past discussed questions relating to the international dateline, and we'll perhaps revisit that in a small way. And there's also the question of benching Gomel afterwards, whether you do, whether you don't. And we'll be touching on a number of these issues. But because they are practical halachas, I should stress that what we're saying is the halacha of Olam Maaseh, and practical questions should always be referred to reliable rabbinical authority. The questions relating to Tfilas HaDerech. Tfilas HaDerech, we say that just as you're leaving the town within a parso, as it is, you say Tfilas HaDerech. It's still okay to say it afterwards, but you should say it just as you're leaving the town. So the question is, when you're on an airplane, the moment you're up in the sky, you're already past this measurement. So the Shutz Be'er Moshe asks, at what moment do you say Tfilas HaDerech when you're taking off in the airplane? And he in fact says, just as the plane is taking off, just as it's speeding up on the runway, that is the time to say it, because once you're up in the air, you're already past this parasol measurement. We have discussed Tfilas HaDerech in the past, so I don't want to dwell too much on it. But there is a very well-known minhag which is brought from the Zohar to actually say Tfilas HaDerech before you leave in your previous davening. So that if you're going to leave after Shacharis, in your Shema Kaleinu of your Shmona Esra, which ends off with the bracha of Shomea Tefillah, just as Shomea Tefillah ends the Shema Kaleinu and Shomea Tefillah ends the bracha of Tfilas HaDerech, so you say in that pause in the Shema Kaleinu, where we say these other tiddly bits like Aneinu and so on the fast day, there you say your Tfilas HaDerech, and that way you can be sure that it has been said. You're doing the bracha of Shema Tefillah in any case, you're not wasting a bracha, and afterwards you can still say it but without the shame and malchus. That's the minhag of the Zohar. And similarly then, if Mincha is your previous Tefillah, you say Mincha and Mariv or whatever. That's the din of Tfilas HaDerech. Well, our favourite subject when we're travelling is to see what food we get. And hopefully you might get a sealed airline meal. It's obviously frustrating when you don't, and it's a long journey. We've discussed in the past mazonos rolls, and only if... some people think that only if it's a koveya suuda, if you're fixing a meal on a roll, then you will say hamotzi. And that is the general principle, because if you have a mazonos roll on its own, assuming that it is something which you say bromine mazonos over, it's only when it's a snack. If you're having a meal with it, then it's a proper hamotzi. And then you've got to get up and wash your hands, which isn't always easy on an airplane. Some will then eat the meal and have a snack afterwards with their roll or whatever it is. But the interesting question I came up with is, when you bench on the aeroplane, do you say the words, you are talking about this house you should have a bracha bestowed upon and the table on which you are eating? It's all very well saying that when you're at home, but do you say that when you are on an aeroplane? And there are in fact a number of views brought in the Sefer Vayi Bin Soa. He says you should not say this nusach. He says that you should perhaps use the phrase used by the Mishnah Berurah when you are sitting in somebody else's house, a Gentile's house, where you might use a different nusach, because it's not your house. So he says, Arach Mishnachronu Barucha Maruba Bahalichos Seinu Uve Yeshiva Seinu Adolom, namely, in our travelling and when we are settling for always. There is another nusach which is brought by the Chavos Yoir, who talks about when you're, say, travelling on a ship. He says, Arach Mishlachlonu Barucha Maruba B'maase Yodeinu B'chol Iskeinu. Because invariably when you're travelling you might be going on business, so you're asking for all things which are B'maase Yodeinu, anything which I set out to achieve, that should get a bracha. That might be more perhaps when you're going on business. When you're going on a teal or family holiday, what do you use? The Otras Broch actually says that if the airplane you are on is Jewish owned, El Al, then you still say the original Broch, Broch Maruba Babayis Hazev Al Shukhan Zeh Shechalnu Olof. So you've got a bit of a choice there. An important rule is to remember that no meat should be left unattended, just like anywhere else. Meat should always be sealed, it might be switched. There was lots of story of somebody who came back to his seat after washing hands and realized that his sandwiches had been unattended, so he decided not to eat them, and his non-Jewish neighbor asked him, why aren't you eating? And it turned out that he wanted to see what the difference might be with taste, and he switched the meat to see whether the fellow would notice. Is an important rule, and that meat should never be eaten if it's been left unattended. A number of interesting questions relate to davening on an aeroplane, especially when we're on El Al and we assume the stewardesses don't mind, and a number of Haimish people come around the plane going Ma'ariv, Ma'ariv, or whatever it is, and expect you to congregate in a rather tight area at the back of the plane, next to the WCs, next to the area where they're preparing to serve the meals, and it's pushing come to shove, and there's lots of squash, and you can't really concentrate on your davening. What is the actual thing here? Are we doing the right thing? Also, can you be sandwiched against the door of a toilet to be actually davening? Well, there are those who write that it's okay to actually daven by the door of the WC. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach wrote in Halichas Shlomo Ches Dalad, he says, I'm not keen at all on having a minyan on a plane. He says, it disturbs other people. He isn't saying it's disturbing yourself, it's disturbing other people, and it's not right to congregate in an area which is used by the rabbim who are not davening, and it's causing disruption. And his remarks are amplified on by Rav Vosner in the Shevet Halevi. He says, it affects your own kavanah. You know, if you don't have the proper kavanah, just when you say Magen Avraham, the first bracha, your whole Shemoneh Esrei is no good. And with all the pushing and the shoving, he says, you're better off davening in your own place. Ah, I can't stand in my own place. He says, okay, if you can't stand, then sit down. Maybe if you're able to stand in a gangway, but he says it's better not to, because there you're also disturbing people. If you can have a few minyanim, all the better, where there are smaller pockets of people, fine. But if it's not practical, he says, you can say your Shemoneh Esrei sitting down in your own place. Difficult that it is, but just sit up straight, don't slouch, reclining back in your seat, and that's what you can do. He even makes reference to the fact that there are always health and safety regulations on any plane, and one must not conflict with any of the requirements or stipulations which are made by the airline staff. There's an interesting observation brought in a Sefer Imrus Moshe. He says, can you actually have tefillah b'tzibur on an aeroplane? Why? Because when you're travelling, you're not stationary, you're constantly in a state of motion. And are you really a tzibur? Or maybe you're just 10 individuals? And he brings a raya on this from an inference in Tosfos in Bava Metzia, that when you're on a ship, are you actually a tzibur? That there isn't necessarily such a thing as a mokum of a tzibur on a ship. And...
I'm sorry, I yes.
Yes.
Why is it not considered tzibur even if you're on something that is moving? What is the chassol? I mean, this earth is also moving relatively fast.
When we are in our fixed place, shul or wherever, yes, it's true the earth is rotating on its axis, but we are kavua, we're in our normal place. And he quotes from the Shutz Zeche Yehosef, Chelek Beis Simon Reish Lamed Hei, that only when you are fixed and stationary in a place, then you're called B'mokom Echod. If the svara he holds is that as you are in constant movement, you're not b'makom echod, and that the start of your mincha is not in the same place as the finish of your mincha, so his svara is it's not a makom of a tzibur. Most poskim, I don't think, go along with this. You know, if you can get a minyan, you get a minyan wherever you are, and certainly when you're on a boat when you've got loads of space. Most will hold that when you are standing together, even though you're in motion, you have got a mock of kibbutz. But that is a view. It's a das yichidohi, but there are two sources quoted which. They stop the
bus. So
is this the Monty New York bus where people daven on their way to work? They could be the issue that it's.
Shalom aleichem.
It's better for concentration. You know, when you're moving, you're more inadvertently looking out of the window and so on. It makes sense just to stop the bus, yeah. But, interesting, thanks for drawing it to my attention. There is another interesting question brought, whether, when you're saying shacharis, can you say the brocha roka ha'oretz al hamoyim? The Shalas Shuvas Be'er Moshe says, in Chelek Zayin, Sadi Aleph, he says, look, it's a brocha on the bria, roka ha'oretz al hamoyim, you're marvelling at Hashem's bria. The land, al hamoyim, the seas, it's okay to say it. But the Sefer Ketzos HaShulchan says, no, when you're on a ship, he says, you don't say this bracha. The bracha is really for when your feet are firmly on the ground. And therefore, he holds, you don't say roka haaretz al hamoyim when you're on an aeroplane.
On a ship.
On a ship or an aeroplane. Well, the Sforim who quotes him refer this to the aeroplane. Ketzos HaShulchan wasn't that long ago. Probably he wasn't referring to an aeroplane. Another interesting question which comes up is benching Goimel after a flight. Now there are some people who go on flights every day, every week. There are certain people who work on the continent and come home for Shabbos. I know a couple of people who actually live in Israel and work in England, and they fly over every Sunday evening and they go back every Thursday night. So it's a very frequent thing for them, and one doesn't think twice about it. So does one bench Gomel? Or there's another question. If you take an internal flight, sometimes it's cheaper to fly London to Newcastle by airplane than it is to go by car or train. Do you bench Gomel for an internal flight? Chazal made a takona. Chazal, it's brought in Gemara Brochus and Nundalud. There are four Hatzrichim Lahodos who have to give their thanks, who bench Gomel. Yerde Hayom, those across the sea. Ochemid Boros, those who go into a desert, a wilderness. Chole Ben Esrape, a person who was sick and became healed. And Chobosh Beleis, serving somebody who was in prison and has been released. There's a mnemonic, V'chol HaChayim Yoducho Sela. Chayim is Chobosh, Yisurim, Yom, and the Midbar. So when you cross the sea, that's the Takana, you bench Gomel. Ah, you might say, but nowadays air travel has such a good safety record, it might have a better safety record than travelling in a car on a road. So therefore, is it duty bound to bench Gomel? And similarly, one goes into a desert. Once happened that my Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Meir Schlesinger Shlita, was asked to take part in something politically, which he didn't want to take part in. It was the election of a new chief rabbi. So he said, I'll be in Chutz Lawrence. And in order not to be lying, he went with some boys on a teal into Chutz Lawrence, which was, well, he went into the Sinai Desert, which wasn't yet given to the Egyptians after the Six-Day War. And when he came back from this teal, he benched Gomel. People said to him, why are you benching Gomel? He says, I was in a midbar. Chazal said, when you're in a midbar, you bench Gomel afterwards. So why do you bench Gomel when you're in a midbar? Because it's a makom sakana. Well, it's true that nowadays you can dehydrate if you're not careful. There might be wild animals around. So there may well be a good reason nowadays. So what's the issue? There's a very long treatise on this in the Shalas Tshuvas Betzel HaChochma, who asks whether when you're travelling in an aeroplane you bench Gomel afterwards, given the modern safety record of aeroplanes nowadays. And he starts with asking, is there a sakana? And he quotes the Meiri in Brochus Nundala Domud Beis, who says, Yesh mi she'omish delo omru ba'alchem idboros ve'o de'ayom she'tzrichim nevareich elo k'she'ir alohem mikre sakona v'nitzon. According to a Yesh mi she'omer quoted by the Meiri in Brochus, that when you go into a midbar or you cross the sea, you only bench Gomel if you incurred some risk and danger when you were there. Something actually happened to you and you survived it. Like a wild animal came your way or threatened to attack you or attacked you and you survived. Then you bench Gomel. The Meiri himself disagrees with that view. However, he brings a Yad HaMelech on the Rambam in Perek Hei Hilchus Brochus Halacha Ches. He says, they do not have to bench Gomel, Rakim Ira Lohem Eza Sakona, unless they had met up with a danger. And he brings proofs to what he says. So according to those two views, the only time that you bench Gomel after crossing the sea or being in a midbar is when you actually incurred a dangerous experience. And then you will bench Gomel, having been saved from it. So, in spite of that, there are a number of poskim who say you do bench Gomel. The Chazon Ish said you bench Gomel when you've crossed the sea. The Minchas Yitzchok says it in Chelek Beis, Mem Zayin. The Tshuva Sanhogus or Rav Shtobuch says it in Chelek Aleph, Kuf Tzadi Gimel. The Igros Moshe writes it in Chelek Beis, Nun Tes. And Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes it as well. The Be'er Moshe suggests it too in Chelek Zayin. So what is the din? So the Betzel HaChochma, Rav Betzel Stern, who used to travel a lot because he was a rabbi in Australia for a while, he brings a svara to say, that there is a good reason nowadays not to bench Gomel with the shame and the malchus if you've been travelling in an aeroplane. Based on those two sources and based on a svara. What is svara? He says, nowadays, when you are in an aeroplane, are you incurring the same experiences as though you were travelling on a ship? If your aeroplane is crossing over a desert, are you incurring the same risks and dangers as though you were on safari or whatever, in a desert where you might be meeting wild animals? You would not be meeting wild animals when you're on an aeroplane. When you're on an aeroplane, it's true that you're crossing the sea, but you're not going to be affected by turbulent waves. There might be a problem with turbulence in other ways with the air, but you're not normally going to experience the same risks like you incur when you're actually sailing on the water and like when you are actually travelling on the ground. And similarly, when you're in a midbar nowadays, we can add to that. If you've got radio transmitters and mobile phones where you can get help where there's an emergency more easily and more quickly, do you therefore, after a teal in a desert, have to bench Gomel afterwards? And it's based on that svara that he feels only if you incurred some danger, some risk, which was confronting you, like there was a lot of turbulence on the plane and oxygen masks had to be issued and you used them or something like that. And then afterwards when you land, you breathe a big sigh of relief and say, Baruch Hashem, thank God we're here. Then he says, you bench Gomel. So he says, Mavurki ein l'chaim l'nose avi on the Baruch HaGomel. Rakim nochiach v'nachnet sh'avim me'alach mayim v'boros But the Shmei wrote Nechshav Kiyomim with Boros Mamash. I would only suggest that you bench Gomel if you can actually say that travelling in a plane is like crossing the sea in the old fashioned sense. Or if you suggest that there's more danger by having to travel in an aeroplane. But the statistics do not show it up that way. And he then, in a footnote at the end, says, I'm comforted to find that there are a number of Rabbonim who agree with me, Rav Dov Beresh Riedenfeld of Chebin, and he quotes the Belzer Rebbe, who apparently said that you don't need to bench Gomel when you travel from New York to Tel Aviv, but you do need to bench Gomel when you drive from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. The Briskarov said the same thing. So everyone should go, of course, according to his own Rav, but we can see that there is this difference of opinion and a doubt that you might only say Gomel without the shame and Malchus, HaGomel HaChayon Temesh HaGomarani Koltuv, without having to stand up each time in front of a minion with the shame and the Malchus.
Many of the Oskin quarters have said that you do require to say HaGomel, and this book that had time maybe in the 50s or 60s before air travel was as common as it was now. In those times it was relatively rare. Nowadays,
alright, but if you bring that argument forward, you might say there are some airlines which are safer than others, given their safety record.
It's over a young.
But
there's over a young.
It's over a young. Yeah.
What's about the Channel Tunnel?
Yeah, I went on the Channel Tunnel this week.
I have heard different views about the Channel Tunnel. Are you crossing over the sea? You're going underneath the sea. I think there are a number of Rabboni who will say you don't need to. I've heard local Rabbonim saying you don't need to say Gomel when you've been through the Channel Tunnel.
Is the channel considered a proper sea? It's only 20 miles wide.
There are people who swim it. Yes. Yes, we can make brachas for everybody else in most circumstances, and Gomel can be said for everyone, and one person can say it for others. Inland flights, the review of Reb Moshe Feinstein was that one should even bench Gomel with an inland flight. But Rav Sternberg says no, he says there's no sakana greater in an aeroplane than, say, with a car. And it was recorded that the Satmar Rebbe took a flight from Miami to New York City and he did not bench Gomel afterwards. And the Sleipnergon said, if you have an internal flight, only if you're crossing over a desert, then you might say it. We've touched in the past on the subject of the dateline, and when we have discussed the dateline, it was more a question as to where it is. There is a difference of opinion between the Chazon Ish and some other poskim as to whether it's 90 degrees east of Jerusalem or 180 degrees east of Jerusalem. Most agree that it's proximate to the international dateline on the Pacific Ocean. But the question is, what is your status when you fly over the dateline? Is it that you are changing your own status in terms of the Chovas Haguf, or is it that you change according to the Mokum, the place that you're in? For example, you keep Shabbos on the seventh day of the week, and during the week you cross the dateline, like you go from New York to Australia, and you lose a day. So Shabbos will not then be on your seventh day of the week, it will be on your sixth day of the week. Do we say that you keep Shabbos on your seventh day, or do we say no, you keep Shabbos on the sixth day, because that's when everybody else in the community is keeping Shabbos? Can you imagine the insult when you start keeping Shabbos on a different day? It's not very nice, is it? But you say, but it's 7 days since I kept Shabbos, and everyone keeps Shabbos a day later. The question also arises with Bris Milah. If you lose that day, is the Bris Milah according to the place that you're in, the eighth day, because the baby was born on Tuesday, do you do it on the following Tuesday? But it might only be the seventh day on the following Tuesday. The same with Pidgin Aben. Pidgin Aben must be on the 31st day of the baby's life, and it mustn't be a day earlier. So what is the din when one crosses the dateline? The question also comes up with Sfiras HaOmer. You might be losing a day. How do you count? We won't be able to go into detail on all these things, but in the principles of it, I'm keeping my eye on the clock. The Torah says, Sheishes Yomim Tavo, 6 days you shall work. So that means you should keep 6 days of working? That's the question. What happens if you don't work? 6 days you will do melacha. 6 days you will flick a light switch. So the Chalas of Tshuvas of the Radvaz in Chelek Aleph Ayin Vov talks about when people are in a desert. Now there is a Gemara in Shabbos Samach Tes which says that if you're lost in a desert and you don't know when Shabbos is, you count 6 days and you keep Shabbos on the seventh day. If that's the case, if you're in doubt when to keep Shabbos, then surely you keep Shabbos on the seventh day. However, there Rashi says, the time you keep Shabbos on the seventh day is Zikaron Ba'almo. It's to keep your memory in tune with the fact there's such a thing as Shabbos. And he says, Shlo Tishtakeach Shabbos Mimenu. That you don't forget the idea of Shabbos. So the idea of simply Monash Shishayomim, of counting 6 days, might not answer the question as what you do when you cross the date line. Rav Yaakov Emden writes, Shin Dalad Mem, that if you've got two people who start off at one point in the world in a desert, and one goes around the world one way and one goes around the other way, so one of them gains a day and one of them loses a day, ending up at the same place, they will both end up keeping Shabbos on different days. An amazing chiddush of Rav Yaakov Emden. But that, with Rav Yaakov Emden's talking about, is when you're in a desert, when you are individuals. Can it be the same when you are coming to a community? So that when you travel to New Zealand, which according to Chazon Ish is outside our dateline and Shabbos there will be on a Sunday, do you keep Shabbos on their day or do you keep Shabbos on another day? It's a community. You can't insult the community that you're in. In Parshas Emor it says, Shabbos il Hashem b'chol moshvo seichem. Shabbos is for you, to Hashem, in all your dwelling places. So we find there's an expression here, moshvo seichem, which seems to be implying that your Shabbos is based on the moshav, on the place that you're in. So if everybody is keeping Shabbos on that day, you have to keep Shabbos on that day as well. There is another raya, which is brought by a number of people who write, a number of poskim who write on the subject of dateline. It says in the pasuk, Mechalaleh Mosumos, a person who breaks Shabbos can be liable to the penalty issued by the Beis Din, by the local Beis Din, by the Beis Din in the town in which you find yourself. And that Beis Din will hold that today, whatever the date is Shabbos. And if you say, no, my day is not Shabbos because I've been travelling and it's not yet my seventh day, then they can take hold of you, and with Edom and Asra, and they can punish you because you're breaking Shabbos. Which means, Horaya, that you should be keeping Shabbos on their day and not on your day. So therefore the Chiyav is a Chiyav on the Makom, on the place, and it's not a Chiyav on the Guf, on the body. Or maybe it's both. We also know about the din of Losis Godadu. Losasu agudos agudos. You don't start doing things differently to the community that you're in. You don't do something separate. You should conform in respect to the place you're in. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. And there is, in fact, a Midrash Socheto which says, don't make a mikro kodesh b'yom echod, and the other people are making their Yom Tov on other days. There it's talking about when you think Rosh Chodesh is or Yom Tov Sheni, you should keep Yom Tov the same day as everybody else. So from there we see a raya that you should be keeping Shabbos or Yom Tov on the day that everybody else keeps it. There is a Shalas Shuvas in the Shevet Halevi, Rav Ozna, who alludes to the Machlokas as to where the date line is, that we should worry about what the Chazon Ish says, that in places like New Zealand or Japan, Shabbos is on the Sunday. There was the story about Yeshiva Brochim who went to Japan in the war, and they were asking, when should we keep Yom Kippur? And in Yerushalayim, they telegrammed some Rabbonim who said, keep the same day as everybody else, and keep when Yom Kippur falls on the Wednesday, according to the calendar, keep on the Wednesday. But there was another group who sent a telegram to the Chazon Ish, And he said to them, Ichlu b'rviya v'tzom v'chamishi. He told them, eat on the Wednesday and fast on the Thursday. So there's a bit of a machlokes. According to the Sheva Halevi, if you're just a visitor in these places, it is correct to keep the Isurim on both days, to refrain from malacha, both on the day that they hold, so with the, when you come into shul in New Zealand on their Shabbos, you keep Shabbos the whole day properly, and on the Sunday he says refrain from malacha and make havdalah on Sunday night, if one can do so. I know the previous rabbi of Wellington, New Zealand, who said, look, I've got to officiate at Leviathan on Sundays. I've got to attend to various ceremonials on Sundays. And he had the Das Torah just to keep according to the place he was in, and that was it. But for visitors to the place, that is what Rav Vosner suggests. That's what I was coming to. Mila is a Choves HaGuf. And if the Torah says you shall do a Mila by Yom HaShmini, it's not Yom HaShmini of the day of the baby's birth. If you mal the baby on the seventh day, which is the following Tuesday from the Tuesday, and it's only the seventh day, then obviously it's written you have to wait a further day because it's a Chiyuv on the Guf. The same by Pidyon HaBen. It has to be the 31st day. And therefore, you will have to add that extra day according to the calendar that you're in. Sfirat Homer is more complicated. There is a view that you just carry on counting normally as though it were Choves HaGuf. And there was even one opinion expressed, which no other poskim went by, that you keep Shavuos on another day. Because Shavuos, you go according to the counting. The Torah doesn't give you a date for Shavuos. It just says on the 50th day. So you count 50 days and then you keep Shavuos. And you might end up keeping Shavuos on a different day to everybody else. This was the view of the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Zechat Tzadik Levrocha. All the other poskim disagreed and said you keep Shavuos on the same day as everybody else. What do you do about Sfira? If you're going to miss a day, then the view of most is you'll carry on counting but without a brocha. You gain a day, it's easy, because you might count the same number twice, but or you just won't count on that extra day. Sfirat Homer is complex. Fill-in is another question. Because what if you lay to fill-in, you daven shacharis, and then because of your travelling, you end up, let's say you daven on a Wednesday, and then you travel, and then it just slightly gets dark when you're travelling, but there's no proper taste of kochavim, and then you come again into the next day and over the date line and you're into a Wednesday again. Do you have to lay tefillin and daven shachris all over again? So the poskim say on that, well, the Patel HaChochma Rav Stern says lay tefillin again but without a brocha, and make a tanai when you daven shachris again, saying if I've got a chiyuv to daven shachris again, now I'm davening shachris. If I don't have a chiyuv to daven shachris again, I'm doing this for taras nadova, like an extra korban, which I don't really have to do, but I'm doing as a gift.
Why does the film have to be without a bracha?
Pardon?
I prefer to make a bracha 3 times a day on film.
Make a bracha?
On film, why should it be without a bracha? If I put it on film now, if I put it on the mitzvah, I can make a bracha again.
That's true. Yeah, you're right. You can lay tefillin several times in the day. I agree. If there's been a hesach das in between, you can make a bracha again.
Maybe there hasn't been yet. Maybe there wasn't.
Well, I was quoting Rav Stern. I think he writes you just do the bracha, but your svar is correct. Sorry.
Maybe he didn't have hesach das because he was wearing the tefillin and he hasn't taken them off. So therefore, that's perhaps why.
Yeah, he was on the flight and he was going over the date line at the same time. Maybe he was wearing the tefillin the whole time. And that there was no Hesech Hadas. Maybe that's what he meant. I beg your pardon?
Yes. Maybe the thing was something like on Chalam Moed, where maybe says that you put it on a Chalam, you don't make a Bracha because there's a question whether you should be putting them on at all. And in this case, although he says you can put them on, so you're putting them on because you think maybe you ought to put them on, whereas there's a whole question whether you. You're not putting on because you want to put them on, where you would make a bracha, but you're putting on because you think maybe I ought to.
That you have a chiyuv to put them on.
Yes.
The point you made is a strong one, that once you have had hesach hadas, you can put them on with a bracha, even though it's not a chiyuv, it's a mitzvah.
You mentioned earlier there was a mashallah regarding
Okay, you can say maybe the same with Zokes Kesusim. The question hasn't arisen as far as I'm aware. You still make those brachas. There is a question in the Paskim about when you are going to sleep on an aeroplane, do you say Shemayim HaMapil before you go to sleep? And there's a question of Birchas HaShachar as well. Did you sleep properly? I've come across this one in the Be'er Moshe. He says, if it's just a short nap, like an hour or so, where they dim the lights on the plane just for an hour or so, then you probably won't say Shemayim HaMapil. But if it's like a transatlantic flight, where you expect to get a longer sleep, then you should say Shemayim HaMapil, and the normal rules apply of Negel Vasser, and when you wake up in the morning, and even if you did not sleep, they serve a snack on the aeroplane. You've got a chiyuv of shacharis once it's omad hashachar, and you can't really eat anymore except have a drink of a cup of tea or something like that. This week is Tisha B'Av, and the shaila does come up in the Betzela Chochma. If you are travelling actually on Tisha B'Av and across the date line, you might end up with a dilemma of having to fast for virtually 2 days. He says no. When you start your Tisha B'Av, that is your Tisha B'Av, he says, and you will complete it as one full day, irrespective of whether it's less or more than 24 hours. Once it gets dark properly, you might be then flying over the date line into a new Tisha B'Av. And you might think that you've got to fast all over again, and you might end up having to fast for 2 days. Well, the Gemara says with Yom Kippur, you don't fast for 2 days because of Sakonas Nefoshes. It's a danger to your life. So in Paskens, you only have to complete 1 day, but on your second day of Tisha B'Av, when you find yourself in an area where people are keeping Tisha B'Av, he says you may eat Betzino, secretly, not publicly, and you have already fulfilled your mitzvah of Tisha B'Av.
What about the link to your fast? You're flying from west to east.
Yes.
You're gaining a shorter
time. Yes, yeah. So the Igros Moshe writes in Chelek Gimel Tzadivol that even if your day is a very short day on the plane, you will fast till your nightfall and then you can eat. He doesn't insist you have to keep Me'ais La'ais for 24-25 hours. An interesting question of Bar Mitzvah, because you might end up by crossing the date line having your Bar Mitzvah day earlier. There's an interesting riddle which comes out from the Betzel HaChochma, because you might get twin boys who say live in Los Angeles, and one of them goes to boarding school in Australia. So one boy is in Melbourne, Australia, and in Australia he will become Bar Mitzvah first. So come say to let's say it's the 18th of Tammuz. The 18th of Tammuz in the morning it's his Bar Mitzvah, he gets called up, they wish him Mazel Tov, drink L'chaim, and then he goes on a plane to join his family and his twin brother in Los Angeles or San Francisco, and he goes over the Pacific, and he arrives in the afternoon of the 17th of Tammuz, the day before. And there's Mincha. So one boy had that morning celebrated his Bar Mitzvah, and another boy is going to Bar Mitzvah the following morning. What is the din? So you paskens, once you're Bar Mitzvah, you're always Bar Mitzvah. So the boy who had his L'chaim in Melbourne, Australia, can be called up to the Sefer Torah and can be counted in the Minyan. But his twin brother cannot be called up and cannot be counted in the Minyan. So Rabbi Yashiv says that the effect of travelling over the date line can bring in your Bar Mitzvah earlier and all the chiyuvim which go with it. In conclusion, there's an interesting thing which I found in a sefer in Hilchos Pesach of Rav Blumenkrantz of New York. He says when we go on our tiulim and on our family holidays, he said we should always bear in mind that these are experiences which our children always remember. That when they grow up and they look back on their childhood, the things that our children remember most are the family tiulim, the family outings, and the trips that we've made. And therefore, it's very important that we use those experiences for the benefit spiritually of our children. Because when we use that time best for learning with the children, for doing things with the children which are constructive. Those are the things which have the greatest influence on them, more so, he says, than what they might be doing in a mundane routine during the year when they're going to school and going to yeshiva katana, etc., etc. And this is perhaps the best message as we're entering the summer holidays to know how we should be approaching them. And when we're talking about air travel, Hashemayim, Shemayim Lashem, Voritz Nasaliv Ne'odam, however much we think we can be in conquering of the skies, we're always reliant on being on the earth. Voritz Nasaliv Ne'odam, and we should never assume, however much we're flying, that we've got control over them and we're always in Hashem's hands, and we should hopefully always travel in safety with the chus of help from Hashem Yisparach. Thank you.